Welcome to the Dating After Divorce podcast. I'm your host, Shade Curry, and I believe every divorced woman deserves a romantic relationship where she feels safe, loved, and cherished. You can create the most amazing life after divorce, and I will teach you how. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Dating After Divorce podcast. I have here a very special guest, Lisa Friend. Lisa is a career coach for teachers. She helps them defeat burnout. She's here to tell her divorce and remarriage story. Lisa, welcome. Thank you so much. Please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi, Shade. I'm so happy to be here. As you said, Lisa Friend, I'm a retired educator turned life coach. And I spent a bulk of my adult life as a third grade New York State public school teacher. So I know what it's like to regularly feel exhaustion, cynicism, frustration, even anger in your job. And you feel like nobody has your back, you know? So even after the dismissal bell, like you go home, you think you'll get relief. You don't. So I totally get what teachers are going through with this burnout and, you know, that feeling of being trapped. And it's just a double-edged sword because it's a career most of us are called to, and it's our passion, and yet it's what's causing everybody such misery and pain and suffering because nobody knows what to do about it. So it's like, I love it, but I hate it. Remember that Listerine commercial? I'm showing my age, but it's kind of just like that. And after I was introduced to coaching, it really changed my life. So I want to give back to my teachers. I feel like I'm a part of that family. And I want to help them and show them how they can turn this around and have it become their passion again. Like it doesn't have to be a feeling of burnout. It can be, it's fixable. Mm-hmm. And that's really what I want to get across to people.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's so needed. I'm a parent. I have children in the public school system and, you know, we all see, everyone sees what isn't working.
Yeah.
And it's not anyone's fault. It's almost like sometimes I'm like, oh, I have this problem, but I know it's not the teacher's fault, but yet it's still a problem. And like, how are we going to deal with it? And, you know, I can imagine that teachers feel like it's still just one more thing.
It is. And it's just like, there's so many hands in the pot for the teachers, you know, so many people are telling them what to do and they just want to teach. They just want to love those kids and teach those kids.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But there's all these restrictions and talk about living through that with COVID. That was just a nightmare on top of a nightmare. So they're really at the end of this burnout. I go back to visit regularly, my friends that are still teaching, and it's just, it's sad and it doesn't have to be.
What does life look like? And I know this is kind of off our main topic. Okay. We'll get back to it in a second. Hang in there, guys. Shade is exploring her curiosity. What does life look like for a teacher after they've worked with you? Like at the end of working with you? What is that difference?
Yeah, good question. So they're calm. They're much calmer. And they learn to just understand. They learn to understand their mind and that it's not all these things coming at them. It's how they're receiving it. So, you know, a teacher is the queen or king of her castle in their room, but they think everybody else. So it's the administrator, it's the state test, it's that parent, everything else is coming at them. And I show them how to completely flip that, that it's not coming at you against you, it's for you. And it's all about what you're thinking about it. So they feel a general sense of calm. I'm not going to say their lives are perfect because teaching is a fast paced, like you're on stage 6-7 hours a day with a 40-minute break. That's it. And you know, teachers who love their job go home and think about it. Like we dream about our kids. So it's kind of like it never leaves your conscious, subconscious brain. And I really show them how to manage and organize all of that so that it's not something happening to them. It's more happening for them. And they just know how to manage it better. And it's like, okay, yeah, no, I'm not going to worry about that. It's out of my control. Yep. Nope. This is what I can do. And this is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I can imagine that they would have like a sense of control and even the ability to turn off and rest at some point.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Teachers feel like they don't have control because so many people are telling them what they have to do, whether it's the state, whether it's their principal, whether it's a parent. And, you know, it's like that sense of losing control that's super frustrating. you know, that you feel you can't change. And I was like, no, you can change it. You have control because it's all here in your mind. You have control. It's your life.
Yeah. So I love that. And I know that probably has parallels to your story in your first marriage. Cause one of the things you had said was like,
yeah,
you felt like you were being micromanaged.
Yeah.
In your first.
Definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You married right out of college.
Okay. So how first time around, got married right out of college, 22. I did love him. Things were good, but I was young. I had a young mind, and what I would go for as an adult mind, you know, I was letting my emotional child brain kind of steer me in this direction that I felt as a woman. And this is all about my beliefs, of course, but I needed somebody to take care of me. That's what I thought. And so I married a man that would take good care of me, could provide for me, because, you know, in my family, that's what was important. And, you know, it was good for a while until I went back. We had two children. I was lucky enough to be able to stay home with them. So that was wonderful. And then I went back to work. And it was like, I worked for a few years in my old fashioned brain. That's what I call it. Mm. And then I started like making friends and seeing how other people who were parents, moms, and how they managed their lives and just different things. And I was like, wow. And I felt like I was living under a rock or something, that I was living in such a different universe than most people. And I got angry because I didn't realize that I allowed my former spouse to have so much control over me. I mean, from the temperature in the house to what we could spend on anything and to his lying about what we could spend. And I'm like, but wait a minute, I'm contributing to the finances now. And that's when I started to realize, you know, and I had a lot of questions from my very old-fashioned Catholic parents who were like, we don't get divorced in our family. And I was like, well, then I don't know what to tell you. Maybe you won't love me anymore. But there was this inner conviction in me. And my father was like, I don't get it. Explain it to me. And I said, Dad, it's like I was under the sea and I came up and saw the light, and there was no way I was going back down again into that dark hole. No way. I just couldn't. And I just had this inner burning. I knew that this marriage wasn't going to be sustainable.
You said that your family didn't understand because, like, on the surface, everything was like amazing.
Yes, that's what they looked at. That's what was important to them. And I love my family. It's nothing against them because that is their belief. But, you know, initially he did provide for 8 years. You know, I had just little odd jobs when I could work jobs. But, and again, did I not value myself as a mom and think, what would I pay myself if I was watching these children day in and day out? Right. Never thought of that. So
it sounds like, I know there are marriages where one person is a stay-at-home parent and the other works. But they, it's sort of like it's not in a top down kind of way. It's more of an equal. Here's my contribution. Here's your contribution. And we consider our contributions equal, right? It sounds like yours was not seen as an equal contribution.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, the barefoot, pregnant, whatever you want to say, mom living at home, taking care of the kids, and you know that was my job.
Right.
You know.
Was there a way to work it out or to change the dynamic with this person? Like,
no,
did you think there was a way to do that?
Yeah, we tried. Mm-hmm. Very, very strong personality. I used to say he should have been a lawyer because even if I was right, he won every argument because he just argued better. Mm-hmm. You know, he argued with lots and lots of reason that I would be like, oh yeah, because I acknowledge my 50% in this. I put him on a pedestal. He's very, very intelligent and I'm average, you know, and just didn't give myself credit for that either. So he learned to manipulate a lot of situations and I allowed it because he was on a pedestal for me. So it was totally a give and take, but I think a little more manipulation. And I don't even know if he would recognize it as that, but it felt, once I realized what was going on, that's what it felt like to me. I was being manipulated in all these different situations.
Right. So you got divorced and I believe you said you were 40 at the time.
Yeah.
When you started dating again, you were 40.
40.
What was that like? Like, awful. What were your thoughts about
being 40? Awful. Okay. So I'm 40 and people want to set me up and I go out with people and it's just like nothing is working. I don't know. I don't know what I thought it would be like, but I didn't think it would be like that. So I was just kind of miserable for a bit. Yeah. It was just had some weird dates and just not great.
And then online or just blind dates?
No, blind dates. Blind dates and people would set me up because, you know, I had lots of teacher friends. So teachers would be like, oh, I have a friend. For some reason, teachers want to help other teachers. And so they're like, I know somebody. I know somebody. And I'm like, yeah, but I have the girls. And the girls were like, I want to say eighth grade and fifth grade. So they were very impressionable and they didn't like any part of this. You know, they were still hoping me and dad would get back together. Because again, I made it look good. I made it look, I protected him and his ways. And I made it look good to the outside world that everything was perfect. And then that's why everybody was shocked with, I can't believe you guys are getting divorced. And I was like, yeah, well, I protected my life. I protected my spouse. Like I think a good spouse does. Like I didn't share out my dirty laundry, you know? So, and then the kids just really had a hard time. So I was very, very cautious with them. You know, I didn't really bring people home. So because that was not a good situation.
Yeah. Do you wonder exactly how divorced women just like you are meeting eligible men who want a real relationship and a commitment? They're doing it by dating with their core values. Your core values are the GPS that lead you to the partner you've been looking for. When you use your core values on dating apps, text messages, and at social events, you will easily connect with your true match partner without chasing, settling, or wasting time with non-committal men. I have taught exactly how to do this in the 2-hour Core Values Dating Blueprint course available on my website, shadecurry.com/dating. That's shadecurry.com/dating. You will learn exactly how to identify your core values and use them on your dating profile, how to ask the right questions via text, and how to tell the right stories on dates so that you attract the right people and repel those who aren't right for you. If you're ready to meet your true match, hop over to shadecurry.com/dating or click the link in the show notes. Now back to the episode. Blind date. So I teach my clients like both dating online and dating offline, as we put it. And a lot of times I tend to get clients in one bucket or the other, those who are like, oh no, no one's ever going to set me up on a blind date. There's no people in my circle or people who are like, oh no, online dating is terrible. And, you know, I walk them through using both of them, but it sounds like getting set up in person was really easy for you. And I just wanted you to talk a little bit about that. Like, how did you create that result of people basically throwing men at you?
Well, I have a very bubbly, energetic personality. I was very highly respected in my teaching field. And so I think, you know, people had a respect for me, even though people were shocked that our marriage was dissolving. I think genuinely people wanted to help. My friends, not my family. My family wanted no part of this. And I was living in New York. My family's all in Connecticut. So that was different too. So it's almost like I had a different insulated world, like with my friends in New York. So I had no family here. But yeah, my friends were really good at that. The online scene back then was not like it is now. Now you have like date tall men, you know, it's crazy what they, it's crazy. And so back then it was just like, I don't know, a few. And it was like, God, I'm not doing that. It'll be somebody who I was afraid of meeting strangers.
But so it sounds like you had cultivated a network of community where that made it possible for you to meet new people.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Teachers are a good community to be a part of. And in my building alone, there are 50 teachers.
Right.
And then I
always say that anyone can cultivate a new community. Like a lot of divorced women do end up losing all of their community.
Yes.
After the divorce.
Yes.
Maybe sometimes don't keep any of it, but there's a skill to like meeting new people and creating new connections.
Yep. Yep. My community from my previous marriage, everybody kind of dissed me. So I didn't have any of them to help me. Yeah. And so I had my teacher friends, mostly was my community, and they really pulled together for me. But curiously, that is, it's sort of how I met my husband, but not exactly. So do you want me to tell you that story? Okay.
Yes. So I was saving it for like.
Okay. So I had met, I had gone on some dates, and I have a funny date story to tell you too. But I was at a union. So teachers were part of a union, and we had a union happy hour that was like, it was called the Spring Fling. And we had that once a year. So of course I went because, you know, it's fun. You got a free drink and, you know, you saw all your friends from different buildings. And I was there, and I was hoping, I had my eyes on another guy, curious enough. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to come. Yeah, I'm going to come. So, you know, I got all dressed, you know, what you do when you're going to be potentially, you know, seen and whatever. And I kept looking at the door, talking to my friends, looking at the door. When's he going to come? He never showed. And so I got a little mad about that. And it just kind of was like, I kind of just threw up my hands and was like, whatever, I'm going to have fun and I'm not going to let this get me. And at that moment, or pretty close to it, it was a very packed bar. And my husband, my current husband, was behind me, and he's tall. I'm like 5'4", he's like 6'2". And we were in this packed bar. He banged up to me, I banged up to him. I like, so imagine our butts are butt to butt, but his butt was in the small of my back. And I was like, I didn't even know who he was. I knew he was a teacher, so I knew he was like safe, but I didn't know him. And so I leaned up against him. He leaned up against me. And it was just like this natural, like, not an aha moment, but just like this natural moment when if we were looking at each other's, our eyes would have locked. Mm-hmm. It just felt so natural and so right. And nothing, it didn't feel wrong or bad or dirty. So his butt is in my back, and I leaned back and he leaned back. And I was like, oh, don't move. My back is killing me. And that feels good. And he pretty much said the same thing. So we just stayed like that for like 2 minutes. And then we turned around and we looked at each other and we introduced who we were. It was the funniest thing.
That's hilarious.
So
like a butt puzzle. Like
that's Yeah. Just like that. Yeah. So he turned around and he's like, he's told me who he was. And I was like, oh, you're Rick Friend. He was kind of like a bigwig in the high school. And, you know, he's big in the union, even though I wasn't in the union at that time. I didn't know him, but I knew of him. And I thought he was like the president of the union. He wasn't, but he just was a big figure in my head. So it was interesting to put a face to the name and somebody I'd heard about. So I knew about him and I knew he wasn't married. And, you know, so I knew he was safe. And then we just started talking. And I want to say we sat in that bar. Everybody left. Like we closed the bar at 3 a.m., I think. And we just sat talking to each other, just talking. And I spilled my guts. I told him everything about my former marriage, which I know they say, don't do that.
Don't do that on your first date, but you didn't know it was a date.
It wasn't. It was just like we were friends. Like I wasn't even looking at him like a romantic partner. Mm-hmm. It was just so easy to talk to him. I didn't feel judged. He was just, tell me more. He was just easy.
Right.
You know, so in that case, I guess I was lucky because I knew he was safe. Because he was in my community and, you know, it was just easy. So, So that was our first get to know each other.
So why was he single?
He was divorced. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a bad marriage, like, you know, went sour. She cheated, that kind of stuff. So he was divorced for 10 years. So he was like, yeah, I'm never getting married again. Oh, and this is curious. So we're 16 years age difference. And so all night he kept saying to me, you know, I just turned 55. My birthday was last week. I just turned 55. I just turned 55. Meanwhile, I'm like 41, 40, whatever.
Yeah.
And
so he was sort of telling you, hey, does this bother you?
Yeah. And I was just like, I totally didn't get it because it didn't even cross my mind. Like, you're just my friend. Like, I just want to talk to you. I don't care how old you are. And so I said, you know, I still tell him to this day. I was like, yeah, that was so weird to me when you did that. But I was like, okay, happy birthday. I kept saying happy birthday to him because I'm like, what do you want from me? I didn't get it, you know, and he was trying to tell me I'm old.
I see that desire from people who are dating. And I think it happens on both sides, both men and women do this. I mean, I work with women, so I see it more with women, but I'm sure it happens on the other side. It's sort of like in this general ether of dating where our brains want to have certainty based on external factors. And it was one of the reasons why I asked why, you know, your now husband, what his situation was. Was he a bachelor? Was he, you know, divorced? Mm-hmm. Some women will be like, well, if he's never been married and never had kids, then he doesn't know how to be in a relationship. And then some women will be like, well, if mm-hmm. he's been divorced and has kids, then I'm really suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Problematic.
Right.
Or if he is this age, then all men this age just want this.
Yeah.
All men this age just want this. And
yes,
it really narrows our ability to be open and curious mm-hmm. and actually makes it harder to find your person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was good for me because at the time I wasn't looking at him like a romantic partner. I was just like attracted to him in all phases of what that means, like physically, mm-hmm. Just more of an emotional connection. We had a very mm-hmm. strong emotional connection that first night because there was no, you know, we didn't have any expectations for each other. We just fell into conversation. It was nice and it was easy. So I do consider myself lucky in that. Like I found mm-hmm. him and it was easy, but I was also, you know, I didn't have an expectation. It wasn't like maybe that's why the dates I had set up weren't good mm-hmm. because there's always this underlying expectation. And I'll talk about that too, because I wasn't really authentic. You know, I was, mm-hmm. and I acknowledged that later, like I would dress in clothes that maybe weren't what I normally wear, you know, yeah. because my friend would be like, oh no, this is current. You have to wear this. You need brighter lipstick. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, even though that's not me, you know, yeah. I'm more like conservative. And I was just me that night. I was just very authentic and myself, and I wasn't trying to be something else. I probably didn't even have any lipstick on. My hair was probably messy. I was standing all night, you know, it's after yeah. a long, long day. And yeah, so.
And I think when we think about the relationship that we want, it makes sense that you want someone who is attracted to your authentic self. Mm-hmm. Because that is the person they're going to live with.
Right, right.
And like you said, there are all these rules about being more attractive in general mm-hmm. on the apps or being more attractive in general on a date.
Yeah.
But that's sort of counterintuitive or the opposite of what we're really trying to achieve. We're really trying to achieve meeting that person who sees us for who we are, mm-hmm. who accepts us for who we are, for whom we don't have to put on any airs or any pretenses. But then we tell ourselves we have to go through all of these hoops of being someone different in order to meet that person. And it doesn't make sense. But it's the way brains work. It's the way
yeah.
our thoughts work.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that's why it was so easy for me. Because I say finding him was easy because I stopped trying. Yeah. I wasn't trying to find somebody or be somebody. And it wasn't the guy I was thinking I was supposed to be attracted to. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. I was thinking somebody else was coming and I was mad he yeah. didn't show up. And then this guy, Rick, falls into my back, literally. And, you yeah. know, it turned into something when I was totally relaxed and in a very comfortable, calm state of being myself. Exactly. Yes. So it's kind of so like good. We have to teach people how to get themselves in that state. You know, instead of right. the pretend, get yourself in that state of just be who you are. Just relax. Yes. If it's going to be a good thing, it's going to be. If it's not, you'll know right away.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's a way of, I mean, I know we talk about getting ourselves into that state. Mm-hmm. When ideally, we should just be living that way all the time.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
yes.
I know it's not easy because the world is always pressing on us to not be who we are.
Yep.
Like every day.
Yeah.
Every day there are rules for all the communities and the workplaces and things, but really that's the goal, is to show up as who we are every day, wherever we are.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think I would think that people who are looking for me, I know for me, initially it was like, okay, I've got to be my best. I've got to be this. I've got to be what I think they think my best is. I wasn't really looking at and saying, okay, this is my best. And letting it really be who I was. Yeah. You know, I needed somebody. My first husband did not really appreciate the fact that I wasn't a wallflower, even though that's what attracted him to me. He wanted a wallflower he could control. And I was like, well, I'm a wallflower, but this is what I want to do. You know, like, I mean, from wearing a sweater, if it had buttons, he'd button it up, you know, to like way up to the top. And I'd be like, oh, but I would be okay with that initially until I realized why. I'm okay with myself. Yeah. I'm not soliciting anything. I love you, you know, and it just was like, stop controlling. It was suffocating to me. And when I realized it was suffocating, that's when I was like, okay, this is not okay. I'm not doing anything wrong. I never intend to. It's just all good. I just have a lot of energy. Yeah. And so I needed somebody who was going to be okay with me being me.
Yes.
Yeah. And so yeah. I was definitely me that night. And my husband now is totally good with it and just stayed with me and talked to me. And that's when mm-hmm. I realized, okay, this is a good guy. It's a good guy. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
How long after you met did you get married?
We dated for 3 years.
Okay.
Because my kids I felt were young and it just was really, really hard. And I kept kind of holding him a little at arm's length for a bit. And then I did something. This is interesting to go along with your idea before of being your authentic self. So I started to really get kind of serious about him. Like I fell hard pretty fast, but I kept him at arm's length because of my kids. You know, I'd see him at his place, but he didn't come to my house. He'd drive by the house sometimes and the kids be like, who's that? You know, I think he picked me up once and they were like, ugh, you know, didn't like it. So
let me guess, they were preteens.
Yeah, it was early teens, preteens. Yeah, it was really a tough time. But I forgot what I was going to say. What we were just talking about.
Being your authentic self.
Oh, yeah. So I started looking at him in his life and he's divorced and his daughter was older. So I was like, okay, that's good for me because I don't really want another kid. You know, I mean, I say that, but if it happened, it would have been fine. You know what I mean? And he was like, I don't want to raise somebody's kids again. Meanwhile, my kids are like 13 and 9. And so he's coming into my life with that. I was like, wow, you really love me. But I started like asking people about him. Mm-hmm. Like, is he a good guy? Is he true and authentic? Is he going to mess with me? Because I'm falling for this guy and I don't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
And I know that was, I don't know if that was good or not, but it's what I did. I asked a few people in the high school that I knew him and they were all like, Lisa, he's a good guy. Like you just got to trust it. And I just had to like take it back a second and be like, okay, I just need to trust it. It feels good. He is good and it's going to work out okay. And it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over those 3 years, because I know you said you asked people, but I also know that we do create our own results. What were the things that you saw that made you like confirm, like the evidence that you gathered over those 3 years that, yep, I can trust this person?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So he was single for 10 years. So there were rumors some of the time about, you know, him dating different people or whatever. And I don't know, you know, there was a little bit of a rumor mill and, I was like, is that true? You know, is that true? And I was just, okay, I've got to just trust this. And the people I asked had known him like their whole career, like 20 years. And I was going out on a fence asking because I really felt like that wasn't nice. It was like, well, what do you really know about him? You know? And they were just like, nobody had anything bad to say. They're like, that stuff isn't true. Whatever you're hearing, it's somebody else making it up who's jealous about something or whatever. It's like that part of the school community can be bad. A lot of gossip. But I'm like, oh, because there was gossip about me too. Oh, Lisa's divorced. And, you know, people put a bad spin on it. You know, I must have done something kind of thing.
Right.
And, you know, the people that knew me were like, no, that's not true. But same for him. You know, when I asked people I knew, I trusted and then I was just like, everything points to him being a good guy.
Right. And I guess that's where I wanted you to dig into, like, not so like in your experience.
Yeah. Okay. Like, so my,
what did part you of, see? Like your green flags.
Let me put it that way. Part of my, so it was my intellectual brain that was holding me back. So because my intellectual brain was like, okay, I know you're not going to have any more kids, but he is 16 years older than you. What's that going to be like? You know, and I went through all of that for a really long time. Like I beat myself up about that. And I'm ashamed to admit it, honestly, because I finally came to a place that was like, you love him. You have no guarantees in life, whether he's younger, older, the same age, you know, and I say, oh, the joke could be on me. You'll be taking care of me in the wheelchair, whatever, you know? So, but I was like, you know, do you think we get 25 years? And I totally put intellectually a lot of stress on that. And that was not helpful. It was not good. And then I realized I was shameful, but then I realized, okay, that's not helpful either. You love this man. He loves you. Mm-hmm. And he just wants all. So the green flags for me were, for me personally, because I came from a controlling marriage, mm-hmm. is that every time we went out, everywhere we went, if we went out with other people, he just let me be me. And mm-hmm. I like to be the life of the party, you know, appropriately so, but I can be loud. My first husband hated that. I'll start singing if there's a microphone. He'd be like, oh gosh. Rick was like, go for it, girl. And he'd be crack, you know, he would be yeah. so happy I was doing it, you know, and then come up and join me or not, you know, he would let me shine and not even care. Yeah. And I just kept seeing things like that, that this man truly is all about me mm-hmm. and what is good for me. And we are just definitely better people together.
Oh and my that, God. Now you have me tearing up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it felt like. Those were all my green flags. Like I, and again, it was the intellectual stuff that really was hindering me. Cause mm-hmm. you know, I was like, oh, the age, it's not going to work. The age. Oh, I have these mm-hmm. two younger kids. It's not going to work. You know, oh, we're in this same community. It's not going to work. People are going to mm-hmm. talk. And intellectually I had all these reasons why it won't work. Yeah. But it was just this, we had such a strong energy together, just this really good, he would just call and talk. Like we talked on the phone a lot because we didn't see each other too much because of the girls. Mm-hmm. So I would always talk on the phone to him at night for like an hour. And that's how we really learned about each other. It's just talking on the phone, like yeah. the old days, you know, it's kind of funny, yes. but it was good because it was, you can kind of really let things out on the phone when it's mm-hmm. not a visual and you're not worried about what you look like and you just kind of let it all out. And it was what we yeah. both needed. I think we both needed to bear all and be okay mm-hmm. with all and accept all. And that was another green flag for me that he told me some serious things about his life. I told him serious things about my life. And if he didn't like it, we better know now kind of thing. Okay. And yeah, so we were both okay with all that stuff. And yeah, 13 years later, we're still going.
13 years married now. Wow. Uh-huh. I do have a question that I think will really help the listeners because I get this question quite a bit. I'll be working with a woman and maybe she's getting on the apps for the first time or we're working on her profile, and, you know, whatever. It's come up several times. And it's like, I don't want the people I work with to see me on the app.
Oh,
right. Or I don't want to date someone from work.
Okay.
Or there seems to be a thing. I think it's my high achieving, ambitious, successful women like yourself. Mm-hmm. Who's, I mean, you didn't have this obviously, which is why I want you to answer this question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who seem to have this because I think their work is their safe space. They're making good money. They have it right. And they feel like this dating thing is unfamiliar. I don't know how to do it. I'm not sure about it. I don't want that to come in and ruin this.
Right.
I have the answer I give them, but I want to hear what you would say to that person who's worried about her coworkers seeing her on an app or noticing that she's dating or even realizing that she's dating someone at work.
Well, I mean, if it's okay to date someone at work, why not? I mean, it's a familiarity. It's something you both share in common. So it's like a bond that you automatically have right there. In my opinion, you know, like we were both teachers and that is a strong, like that's a passion that we share together. We get what it's like to be a teacher and love children and the highs and lows of it. So that was an immediate bond. You tend to mm-hmm. think alike. So people in the same business, I would think tend to like, it's the same kind of thing. They tend to think alike, you know, and just, you know, if it's go for it, what have you got to lose? Because the only thing you have to lose is if you're going to think, if it doesn't work out and you're going to think, oh gosh, this is going to be horrible here. Well, that's just a thought too. It could work out and you could still just be friends. Like I had my eyes on somebody else at work and like, it was just eyes and a little flirtation. It didn't work out, but we're still friends to this day. Mm, you know what I mean? So,
What I'm hearing is that trust yourself that you can handle whatever comes with that. Like if you do date someone at work and it doesn't work out, trust yourself to create a process that makes it such that you can handle it.
Yes.
Like usually what I will work with my client to say, okay, if it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, how are you going to handle it? Or how are you going to handle it now with the knowledge that it might not work out. So we create protocols or like, here's how we're going to interact
that
with
makes
this person
sense.
In a way that's appropriate and all of those things. But what I heard from you was just really that self-trust that I can handle whichever way it goes.
Yeah, sure. You know, because I mean, I think you have more to lose. Like, what's it costing you? What are you losing by not taking the chance? And for me, it was too heavy to not take the chance. Like it was costing me too much more to not take the chance for a potential person that we had so much in common right from the start.
Yeah.
You know, so I would encourage people, if you're attracted, if it looks good, don't worry about that. Worrying about what other people think is just not a good thing. 100%. Anytime. It doesn't serve us anytime ever.
Right. And you know? I'm like, listen, first of all, if you date someone at work, they're networked in. Now that doesn't always make a person a great spouse, but it does have some checks and balances in place just to start, because the app is like a free for all.
Right.
There are people from everywhere on the app. But if someone is like in your building or on your work campus or in your work network, there's some minimum requirements that they have. First of all, they have a job.
Right.
And then, like you said, secondly, there's potentially some compatibility there. Right. There's some similarities there, which, you know, psychologists say is always an indicator of the success of a relationship is do you have enough overlap in you and similarities? And then finally, there's also just that, like, the way I look at it is there's so many. I do not like this phrase. I'm using it because I can't think of a better phrase right now. Low quality men, as people put it, out there, right? Like if you're dating a coworker, he's automatically somewhat a high quality man, because if you're working in that workplace, I mean, unless there's a huge gap, like an education level or whatever, you might not, depending on what your standards are. But this is a person who has a job, who's working for what potentially is a decent company that you're working for, potentially similar salaries, like, he's already a high quality man. Now he might not be the right high quality man, but like in a pool where it's like, there's no high quality men, thoughts that people have, not me.
Right.
Why would you turn away a whole bunch of them just because they work in your.
Right. Which is showing that, you know, you're not really trusting yourself that you could handle it. And you're already putting out to the universe that, oh, this might not work. This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's also part of what people have to look at. What are you creating for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, and that's what I'm thinking, you know, if you're going to create that. And I didn't have an opportunity to create that, because when I met my husband, like that was kind of taken away. So that's where I said it was easy for me, because it was just like, yeah, we're just friends. I just know you from work. And yes, we're connecting right now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have to worry initially. I mean, I did go through that with the dates I had, but I didn't have to worry that time with Rick.
Yeah. It's always a process. I think everyone goes to through some version of this process.
Yeah.
But one thing I always say is when you meet the person, it is always effortless.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Effortless. And that's where I say easy and just this energy. And it was more than like a physical attraction. I would say, honestly, it was more of an energy attraction right off the start.
Yeah,
it really was. And that felt good to me.
So good.
Yeah.
So where you are in your relationship, you married 13 years. I'm guessing the kids are out of the house.
Yeah, the kids. So his daughter is older. She's 40 and she's married and good. And we have a great relationship. And I have two daughters. So we have three girls. And then my oldest is going to be 30. And then my youngest is 27. So they both are out of the house, which is nice. And we just bought a new condo, which is gorgeous. And we were kind of waiting for this to have it be our own. And it's kind of our own. And it's really nice to like grow something together, because we were living in the house I had with my former husband. We renovated it some, but it was still that house. Yeah. And when we got this new house and it was just ours, it felt really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the kids obviously turned, you know, they were just super neutral with him. And now it's like, everything's good. And, you know, they come over, they stay for Christmas. And then, you know, cause they don't live far. One lives in the city, but you know, I have room for them to stay. So it's nice. And so, yeah, we're just enjoying each other, being retired. I just retired in June from teaching.
Congratulations.
Yeah. So I was coaching and teaching at the same time for a while. And I was like, you know what? He's older. It's time to retire and enjoy our life together and do some fun things. I'll have my my business, that I can like negotiate my own time, my own hours, mm-hmm. and we can enjoy our life together.
Oh, I love you so much.
That's what we're doing right now. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you share that. I always ask that. I often ask that to give, because I know I didn't have the vision of what I have now when I was starting out dating. It's just hard to, especially when you've come from a bad marriage, it's hard to envision that it could be good. Mm-hmm. And I always want to share with the listeners that it really can be good.
Yep.
We do have that messy middle where we're working through it, but it can really be good. There is like that possibility on the other side. So I was just looking that hope alive.
It's really, really good. It's really good. It is. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Lisa.
Thank you.
The story is amazing. I want to thank you for sharing it with the listeners. Please tell us again what you do and where the listeners can find you if they want to follow you on the internet, if there are any teachers who are listening to this and want
teachers,
to
teachers. Yes. So I'm at lisafriendcoaching.com. That's my website. Check me out there. Lisa Friend Life Coach on Instagram and Lisa Friend Coaching on Facebook.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. This was fun. Such a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. Thank you for your time and attention today. Please follow Lisa. All of her information will be in the show notes. I will see you next time on the podcast. Thanks for listening today. If you are ready to get married after divorce, I want to invite you to download my free 8-video training specifically designed to help divorced women date with ease and get married again. Head over to shadecurry.com to get started. That's SadeCurry.com. I'll see you inside.